Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on and about the environment, our relationships with and impacts upon that environment. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us by phone, the second part of the show, is Walt Meyer. He is the senior research scientist at the National Snow and Ice Data Center at the University of Colorado in Boulder, Colorado. And he's here to talk about Arctic sea ice, Antarctic sea ice, trends and observations associated with that. Walt, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start here, a little definition of terms. What do we mean by sea ice?
Sea ice is the ice that grows and melts in the ocean. It floats on the ocean surface when the ocean reaches the freezing point. And so it's floating, it's drifting around with the winds and the currents in the Arctic and the Antarctic. It doesn't raise sea level. That's important to mention when we're talking about sea ice, because it's all happening within the ocean. So it's like an ice cube melting within a glass of ice, as opposed to like the Greenland or Antarctic ice sheets or glaciers, which is land ice, that when it melts, it's like dropping an ice cube into water. That does raise sea level.
Right. Okay. So when you're measuring sea ice, first, how is that measurement made?
So we do it primarily by satellites because it's a big area. The Arctic Ocean is about the size of the lower 48 United States, and that tends to be mostly ice covered throughout most of the year, although that's starting to change, as we'll talk about, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So it's a vast area. And really, to get the data, and of course, it's remote, it's cold, people don't like to go there. people do go there to get some data on the ground in ships and camps and so forth for short periods. But to get long-term data, we're looking at using satellite data.
All right. And when you're measuring the extent of sea ice, is that what you're seeing as that part of the ocean that is covered by 100% of sea ice or some other percentage of it?
So we use a 15% threshold, and that's kind of comes out of the way the data is and just as a good kind of rule of thumb and being consistent. Generally speaking, when an area is ice covered, it's pretty close to 100% most places, only right near the ice edge within 50 to 100 miles of the ice edge is where you get areas where you can get, you know, 40, 50% or even down to 20 or 30%. But we include anything above 15%.
That's interesting. So if you have let's take a square mile of water, mm-hmm. and 15% of it is ice covered, for purposes of the research, you're just assuming that entire square mile is defined as ice covered.
That's what we generally use. Look at what's called area, which is where we weight everything by the concentration. So we're measuring specifically how much ice is there. So if there's 15%, we're measuring only that 15%. Part of the issue, though, is the satellites that we use oftentimes underestimate ice cover when it's low percentage. And you can get some skewed results when you're looking at area. Especially from a long-term climate change perspective, we look at the extent because it's a more stable, more reliable number. And like I said, those areas where you're getting down to low percentages are really a pretty small fraction of the overall ice cover.
Okay. And one last thought about is, does thickness matter? Is it sea ice cover, whether it's like a foot thick or 5 feet thick, it's still coverage, right?
So in terms of our measurements, thickness, there's no information on thickness. It's just where there's ice on the surface. It doesn't matter how thick it is. In terms of the climate and how the ice is changing, thickness is absolutely critical. And it's very important, and there's a lot of interest in it, and there hasn't been a lot of good data until recent years. We're getting better and better data on thickness. So we're finding out some really interesting and, I guess, somewhat worrying things about thickness as well.
Huh. Okay. So let's first talk about the Arctic, then we'll spend some time on the Antarctic. What are the trends and observations you're seeing with respect to extent of ice coverage in the Arctic?
So in terms of the extent of ice coverage, it's going down, and going down pretty dramatically, particularly in the last 15 years or so. We're seeing a decline on the order of about 12 to 13% per decade, so over 10% per decade of ice loss at the end of summer. So the ice grows in the winter, it grows out, fills out the entire Arctic Ocean, and even extends down, kind of into the Bering Sea and along the coast of Greenland. Hudson Bay gets covered with ice. But in the summertime, it melts back. And we're seeing declines pretty much everywhere at all times of the year. But the biggest decline is at the end of summer in September, where we have this really large decline. And we've had, like I said, the last 15 years in particular are really significantly low. The last 14 years of our data, and I think this year we'll make 15, are the lowest 15 in our satellite record, which goes back to 1979.
I was just going to ask, how many years of data do we have on this? So how does our average ice now compare to that, I guess, 1979 or thereabouts?
Yeah, so our best data and most complete data, it starts in 1979 with, it's called passive microwave sensors, passive microwave remote sensing. It's a kind of a sensor. It's seeing the ice and seeing energy from the ice in the microwave range. And so it's not like visible, it's not like our eyes, it's a different part of the electromagnetic spectrum. But the thing that's really nice about that is that it's, number one, very sensitive to whether water is liquid or ice. So that's really useful, so we can distinguish between ice and water very well. And it also, it doesn't need the sun, which is important in the polar regions where you have 6 months of darkness. And it sees through clouds, and there's a lot of clouds in the polar region. So from starting in 1979, or actually late 1978, 1979 is our first full year, we have essentially complete daily coverage of both the Arctic and the Antarctic, and continuous with some minor gaps here and there, but basically continuous for now over 40 years. However, we do have information beyond that. It's not as complete, and it's not as quite as reliable, but I think we can make pretty confident conclusions about that. Going all the way back to into the 1800s, based on from the 1950s forward, aircraft, early satellites that got us partial data, ship logs, explorers, whaling vessels, and so forth. So it's not as complete. But we can get data, and we do have some data going all the way back to about 1850. And what we see compared to then is nothing from 1850 to 1979 and into the 1980s is anything like what we're seeing now. This is far below any other year going back at least that far. And we have indications from proxy records, which are records that don't tell us ice directly but tell us the conditions in general, things like ice cores and sediment cores and tree rings, that can give us at least kind of what the temperatures were like. And, of course, temperatures correlate very well with the ice cover. So what we're seeing from that is we're well below anything probably back at least 6,000 to 8,000 years ago.
Oh, okay. And as far as this loss goes, you're saying it's averaging 10% loss per decade. Is it happening on a uniform basis, or are there parts of the Arctic Ocean that are experiencing more loss than other parts?
So the areas that we're seeing the biggest losses are on the Pacific side, so north of Alaska and north of eastern Siberia, the Beaufort Sea, which is north of Alaska, and the Chukchi Sea to the west of it. Those are areas that we're seeing in the summertime particularly really melting back. And those areas typically were pretty much ice covered almost to the coastline of Alaska. A place like Barrow, Alaska, right on the northern tip, the northernmost city in the United States, or Kubiak as it's called now, used to be, it would open up a little bit in the summertime. You'd have a channel that could get ships in there generally. There would sometimes be years where it was very difficult. They might need icebreakers. But the ice would pull away from the coast, maybe 100 miles, maybe 200 miles. Now we're seeing the ice almost every year pulling away hundreds, even over 1,000 miles away from the coast, big open water areas, and the ocean temperatures are getting very warm, relatively speaking, during that summer period.
And is that open water happening in the winter too, or is the ice recovering?
So the ice recovers in the winter. It does freeze up. The sun goes down. It gets cold. It's freezing up later. We're seeing open water extend much farther into the fall and even towards the winter sometimes, into October. The minimum is generally around mid-September, but we're seeing areas staying open into October, even November. But what we're seeing in the wintertime, it's still, the Arctic Ocean pretty much fills up with ice in the winter. Mm-hmm. It gets cold enough, it freezes up. But as far as extending further south beyond the Arctic, it's not doing it as much as it used to, or as far as it used to. So we're seeing declines. They're smaller. They're on the order of about 4% per decade. It's a smaller change, but it's still a significant change. And we're seeing areas where there's much less ice than there used to be. The Barents Sea, for example, which is north of Scandinavia, part of it stays ice-free. The coastline of Norway, for example, stays ice-free because of the remnants of the Gulf Stream, the warm ocean waters coming up there. But those warm ocean waters seem to be having a bigger effect. The ice is not as extending farther south, as far south. In other areas, the Bering Sea, south of the Bering Strait, along between Alaska and Siberia, south of the Arctic Ocean, that had some high years actually in the wintertime several years ago. But for example, the last 2 years have been very low, and really that the Bering Sea this past year was mostly ice-free throughout the wintertime, whereas it would generally be completely ice-covered for much of the winter.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about causes there. I mean, they're interrelated. I mean, is it a function, as you mentioned, warmer water, or is it a function of warmer atmosphere that they play a role? But is there one or more of these that are the primary driver?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on. The primary driver though is warming temperature. Yeah. The temperatures get warmer. When you get to 32 degrees Fahrenheit, ice melts. And that's one of the things that's really important about the polar regions and about sea ice in particular, is it's really sensitive to small changes. When we talk about global warming, we're talking a couple degrees Fahrenheit right now, which to a lot of people doesn't seem like a lot. And in a sense, it really isn't a lot. Changing your thermostat from 70 to 72 is something you may not really notice. But in the Arctic and in the Arctic Ocean with sea ice, changing from 31 degrees Fahrenheit to 33 degrees Fahrenheit, just 2 degrees, you're going from skating on the ice to swimming in the ocean. And so that's the overriding driver. However, because of the way the Arctic is, there's a lot of feedbacks, we call reinforcing mechanisms.
Right.
And that's where the ice is very reflective of the sun's energy, and you have 24 hours of sunlight in the summertime. So there's a fair amount of sunlight coming in and striking and getting to the surface, and the ice is white, and it reflects most of the energy. It reflects 50 to 60% at least, sometimes even more, depending on how the ice is. And so all that energy just gets reflected back to space, doesn't come into the system at all. The ocean is very dark and absorbs over 90% of the energy. So all that energy, almost all that energy coming in from the sun, going into the ocean, goes into the ocean, heats it up, and the ocean warms up. Well, what happens then? Well, the ocean's warm. That heat from the ocean then eats away at the ice more. It also warms the atmosphere more. So particularly into the fall when the sun is going down, that ocean heat keeps feeding into the atmosphere and keeping the atmosphere warmer. And so you get this kind of feedback cycle, this reinforcing cycle, where an initial warming causes ice to melt, ocean gets exposed, the sun comes in, gets absorbed by the ocean heats up more, that melts more ice, and so you get this kind of vicious cycle and this feedback loop where the Arctic warming essentially gets amplified. That's what right. we call it, Arctic amplification, and we actually see that in the temperature data, that the Arctic is warming two to three times as fast as the global average.
Right.
So are we at a point now, like a breaking point or a tipping point, where even if temperatures were to return to historic averages, we might not see the same extent of ice? Is there any kind of prediction about how that would play out?
So this is the good news, actually. There had been talk about 10 years ago, there had been concern about, are we going to reach a tipping point where the Arctic tips into an ice-free state, at least during summertime, and we can't get it back, even if we try to cool things down, even if things like carbon emissions significantly decrease and carbon concentrations, CO2 concentrations significantly decrease. However, the later research that's been done in the last 10 years or so kind of points the opposite direction, that the ice is very sensitive to temperature, and it reacts fairly quickly. The ice is quite thin. At the most, it's about 3 to 4 meters thick over most of the Arctic. On average, it's about 2.5 to 3 meters thick, although it's been thinning. So now we're probably in the order of 1.5 to 2 meters thick. 4 to 6 feet thick, basically. But what that means it can respond to warming temperatures pretty quickly, and you lose the ice, as we've been seeing happening. But it also means that you can regain it if temperatures cool down. So the latest models indicate that, if we stabilize or decrease emissions and have the temperature stabilize or go down, the ice will come back. So all hope is not lost for the Arctic sea ice.
Well, that's good news. We like that.
Yeah, occasionally. Thank you, Walt, for that. We're speaking with Walt Meyer, senior research scientist with the National Snow and Ice Data Center out of Boulder, Colorado. We've been focusing on sea ice loss in Arctic. We'll turn to Antarctica in a second. I just want to know, I want to get this right. You said the 15 lowest years, or record, however you want to say, lowest extent of sea ice measured in the Arctic have all occurred in the last 15 years?
Yes. Let me think about it. Actually, I think we're at 12 right now, all right. And in 13 out of 14, it'll be 14 out of 15.
And
somewhat high year in 2006.
Okay.
Let me correct that.
But the vast majority of them have all occurred within the last. And where are we trending? How's this year unfolding?
So this year's looking pretty interesting. So our record low year was in 2012, and that got us down to about 3.3 million square kilometers, about a million square miles.
Okay.
That's about half of where we used to be on average in like the 1980s. And we haven't been quite that low since then, but we've had, like I said, continuous much lower than normal, among the lowest since then. Right now, we're trending actually below the 2012 extent at this time of year. So we're, in a sense, we're on a trajectory to beat 2012 if things continue as they did in 2012.
And when does that minimum occur?
And that occurs around mid-September. It depends on the weather, but anywhere between early September to the third week of September, usually around the 12th of September on average.
Okay.
So we've got about 2 months of the melt season left, we're watching it. It's interesting. My gut feeling is we probably won't hit a record because things have to be just right. I think, in terms of, we're on this downward trend, so it's getting more, it's more and more likely we're going to have low than high for sure.
Right.
But, records and extremes generally happen because of other extreme events like really warm temperatures. We saw that in 2012. It was just a really warm summer, and there was a big storm that broke up a lot of ice as well in August. And so, we don't know if we're going to get something similar to that, like in 2012. And, chances are probably not, but we're on a trajectory where it's interesting.
All right. Well, we only have a couple minutes, and I do want to touch on what's going on in the Antarctic. Even though it's the middle of winter, they're also experiencing fairly low extents of sea ice.
Right. Yeah. And it's been low. The Antarctic's really fascinating place as well. It hasn't gotten as much attention because essentially it doesn't have a downward trend. And in fact, for several years in our records, it had a somewhat of a upward trend,
right.
Quite small, much smaller than the downward trend in the Arctic. People did try to make the case, the Antarctic's going up, the Arctic's going down, nothing's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really combine them together because they're two different systems. But even if you do, even if you did, the Arctic was changing so much more rapidly. And the Antarctic is a very different environment. To make a bad joke, they're polar opposites in terms of their sea
we
ice.
We appreciate that.
I like that.
Yeah. The Antarctic is a continent surrounded by sea ice. The Arctic is sea ice surrounded by continents. That makes a very big difference in how the ice behaves. The Antarctic ice is much thinner. It's on the order of about 3 feet thick, 1 meter, where, as I said, like the Arctic is, 2 to 3 meters thick, even though it's thinning quite considerably. And it's much more volatile. It has a bigger seasonal cycle. It loses a lot more ice. Almost all of the ice disappears from the Antarctic during the summertime, and then it expands out hugely, twice as much as what you get in the Arctic, or close to twice as much. And what we're seeing is we had some increasing trends. We had some pretty high numbers in like 2014, 2015, and then it dropped off a cliff, and we had dropped all the way to record lows.
Hmm.
And we have some evidence of this happening in the past in the 1960s from early satellite data that we've analyzed. And so that period in the 1979 to the early 2010s may have been kind of somewhat of a quiet period, unusually quiet period that we are tracking, and the variability is actually a lot more. So the story of the Antarctic is, not much change yet. A lot of changes from year to year, but not much large scale trend. The projections are, as things warm, it will go down, but the warming hasn't impacted the Antarctic, at least the sea ice, significantly yet, partly because of the way the ocean winds and the currents around the continent work. They play a much bigger role than actually the temperature does.
Right.
So the Antarctic's very interesting. In some ways, there's a lot more questions about the Antarctic now than the Arctic, even though the Arctic changes are more impactful.
Well, you can find these questions and hopefully some answers at the National Snow and Ice Data Center website. That's nsidc.org. You guys do a great job at tracking everything Arctic and Antarctic. And you stay on top of, you have reports that not just monthly, but like almost weekly basis on the Arctic sea ice.
Yeah, it's our Arctic Sea Ice News and Analysis.
So yes.
If you go on the website, you'll find it. It's right on the front page, and the data is updated every day, and we do reports regularly, especially during the summertime. We're trying to do them fairly frequently. We should have one out later today, actually.
So. All right. Well, Walt Meyer, Senior Research Scientist with the NSIDC, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us this morning.
All right. Thank you. Nice talking to you.
All right.